You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Good evening, folks. I think you're going to enjoy tonight's broadcast immensely. It's a lot of information that most of you have never heard before, don't know anything about. By the way, this is a live broadcast. That's right. The rumors that you have heard are not true. I am still here, still breathing, and I am talking once again. Every winter I lose my voice, it seems, and you know you've been listening to reruns. Well, it's coming back. And tonight I have help in the studio. My oldest and dearest friend is here with us tonight, and he is going to be giving you all of the things that I've been hinting at and trying to tell you about regarding trusts, but he specializes in it. I operate a trust. I know what I have to do to operate the trust. He knows everything, I think, that there is to know about trusts. At least, he's never been stumped by any question that I've been able to ask him, and you know what kind of questions I ask. So, you had better have pen and paper by your side, and be prepared to write copious notes. And, by the way, while you're at it, get a dictionary and look up copious. You're going to be at times entertained. You're going to be enlightened. Your knowledge is going to expand exponentially with each moment that you listen to this broadcast tonight. And, you're going to be uplifted. I'm going to give you some hope. And you're going to understand, hopefully, a little bit more about what this fight is all about and what the stakes are. You see, a lot of people don't know that we're in a war. And the stakes are high. If we lose this war, many of you don't realize what it is that you're going to lose. And I think you're going to discover some of that tonight. So, go about your little domicile there and gather up what you need. Pen, paper, something to snack on maybe. Maybe a Coke or a cup of coffee or a glass of water or whatever it is that you need to wet your whistle with for the next 2 hours. Find yourself a very comfortable chair, sit back, and be prepared for an astounding evening. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bill. Glad to be back here again.
Tarzan wasn't the latest man. He just come along and scoop him up under his arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. Clark Kent, now there was a real gent. He would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme. Dumbers and he doing nothing. Superman never made anybody see the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Hey, Mom, Sue had a straight job. Even though he could have smashed through any bank in the United States, he had the strength, but he would not. Folks said his family were all dead. Planet crumbled, but Superman, he forced himself to carry on. Get Krypton and keep going. Superman never made any money. See the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan is king of the jungle and lord over all he hates. But he could have his dream together for words. I Tarzan, you Jane. Sometimes Soup was stopping cries. I'll bet he was tempted to just quit and turn back on them. Join all their wars. But he stayed in the city, kept on changing clothes and dirty old phone booths till his work was through. Then nothing to do but go home. Superman never made any money. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him.
Did you ever wonder about that, folks? Well, I can tell you it's not true. There are men like him. One of them here is in the studio with me tonight. The only thing that really gets me all upset about him is when I need to get in the phone booth, he's always in there changing his clothes. That's all about, folks, what side are you going to take? Are you going to live in the jungle with Tarzan? When you want something, you're going to hit somebody over the head, just take it. Are you going to live by the rule of law? And if you are, which law? You're going to hear an awful lot about that tonight. I want to live with Superman. I don't believe he's dead. I never will. In fact, standing right here by me. Name's Bob Swan. Some of you from years back who have been listening to this broadcast have heard a couple of guest appearances on the Hour of the Time. And so, Bob, welcome once again.
Well, Bill, it's wonderful being here. You know, every time we get together, I take walks down memory lane. And hopefully tonight what we're going to do is we're going to cut through the fog. I think there's a lot of fog out there. What we want to do is have you think about going through a fog barrier. How does it feel before you get to the fog barrier? Are you nervous? What's it like when you get on an airplane and it's overcast? How do you feel taking off on the runway? Are you a little nervous? But what happens when you break through the clouds and see the crystal clear sky? How do you feel? Tonight, we're going to talk about feelings, connecting with those feelings, because your intuition is what you're going to need to listen to, because that's the only thing that will help you survive in the jungle, is that intuition. You know, I've got these great visuals in front of me, and so all I can do is describe them to you. But before I start describing them to you, why don't you take your wife, your kids, put your arm around them.
Children.
And love them. Picture San Francisco Bay, if you will, on a beautiful, crystal clear day. You're on a boat, and you're sailing through the bay, beautiful winds. But as you head for the bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, there's a fog bank. As you go through that fog bank, you will see other vessels turning around, going the other way. Why? Because they don't want to go through the fog. I'm talking about the fog of confusion and fear. This broadcast tonight, we were not going to be dealing with anything pertaining to fear. Because quite frankly, that's the bad side. That's the evil side. So as you're sitting there, we're going to cut through the fog bank. Joseph P. Strauss, the chief engineer of the Golden Gate Bridge, said, when he looked at the Golden Gate Bridge, he says, it is a giant porthole that swings wide into the world of wonder. Don't be afraid to dream. Man, oh man, what's happened to us? What's happened to our life? See, you know, I'm not really bothered by the predators out there, the frivolous lawsuits. This nation is the largest nation of litigations. The most attorneys in the world live here. They don't really bother me. The taxation system, that doesn't bother me either. What bothers me, and it gets right to my heart and my soul, is they're stealing our dreams. The ability to imagine things and go on are being robbed from us. Material possessions don't count. The power of the dream and the imagination is what life is all about.
And that's what's wrong with the young people today. They've lost the dream.
They can't see the vision.
They can't see a future.
That's right. So as we look at the visual of the Golden Gate Bridge, we're going to take a look at the bridge from a couple different directions. Most of you have seen pictures of it. Some of you have maybe have even driven across it. But in the inaugural speech of the president of this country, he said that he is going to build a bridge for you into the next century. Wild, huh? How does that make you feel? He's going to build a bridge for us into the next century. What are the questions here? What kind of foundation does this bridge have? What qualifies him to be a bridge builder? In that same speech, he urged all Americans to take back responsibility of their life, follow the law, and live the American dream.
And if we did that, why would we need a dream? I mean a bridge.
Well, we need to get to a village, though. You know? But in this bridge building, consider the possibility of you, men in your families, wives, individuals, building your own bridge, building a generational bridge into prosperity. Not for this year, not for next year, but for generations to come. I was doing a presentation the other day at some ranchers out in Northern California. And in that presentation, there was a tax expert sitting there, and I deferred a lot of the questions to him as the tax expert. I am not a CPA. I am not a lawyer. I do not give tax advice. The question I asked was, what does it mean to die intestate? And I defer the question to the tax preparer, and he says, oh, I don't really know. I guess that's with a will or without a will. Well, folks, dying intestate means without a will. Do you have the power to create law? Do you have the power to write law? Think about it. As I am looking into your living room right now, I see a lot of you shaking your head yes, and I see a lot of your head shaking no. Well, if you die intestate, that means you left no direction. The state comes in with their bridge. See, they have a bridge already built for you. You're already on that bridge. What I'm suggesting tonight is that you get on your own bridge. Because the simple act of sitting down and writing your last will and testament is self-enacted contract. It's law pertaining to your desires. That's power. You have the power to create law. How is law created in other areas? Statutes, court cases, and so on, case precedents, and so on. So what I'm going to be talking tonight to you about is your ability to create law, a generational plan. So as you design your bridge into the next century, what do you want to see on the other end?
When tears are red,
Are troubled. So we're going to look at some solutions and some actions, some positive actions that you can take. But what we need to do is we need to look at the bridge. We need to look at the bridge of life, the journey through life, and we need to take a look at it from a different perspective. For those of you that are listening out in San Francisco or any city that has a bridge, take a look at it during the day and then go take a look at it during the night. You'll see a different scene. You'll see a different picture. It'll be the same bridge, but it'll look differently. So as we go through the next 2 hours, we're going to be looking at life a little bit differently, from a different perspective, a positive perspective with no fear. What I'd like you to do is write down what concerns you in your life. Are estate taxes a concern in your life? How about liability? Is that a concern? What about privacy? Write them down. Privacy. Liability. Are there predators out there trying to steal from you? They're all around. But what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it in a plan? Because before we build our bridge, we better develop a plan, a solid plan that has been tested for generations. I think what we need to discover, though, is we need to discover how our system has been set up, where people are at, and where they're at on the informational line. Bill's been talking to you for years about power structures and people in different situations. What I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to ask you to get out a pencil and a paper and draw a diagram. The diagram, I want you to draw a giant triangle, a big triangle, because there's going to be a lot of lines going through it, horizontal lines. And at the bottom of this triangle, right, where am I on this diagram? Because what I'm going to be describing to you is exactly where you're at. Now, once you understand exactly where you're at, then you'll be able to view where other people are at. See, as we go through life, we have a perception or a window of belief. As we look out there, all we relate to is our belief or our belief window. We need to look through another window to see what else is going on. So at the bottom of the diagram, where am I on this diagram? At the very bottom, draw a line all the way across and carefully write, zero option people. They have no options. Why? Why don't they have options? They're homeless. They're unemployed. They're on welfare. Is anybody going to sue them? Is anybody going to take anything away from these people? No, they don't have anything. What a concept. So I'm going to interject a concept called stewardship. I was always raised that we came in with nothing, we're going to leave with nothing, but while we're here, we have a stewardship. What we do with our stewardship and how we handle it is how our life will be felt in joy and happiness. If we're causing agitation, we're not going to be happy campers, are we? So these homeless people, people with nothing, they have absolutely zero liability. Now I want you to go all the way to the top of the triangle, all the way to the top, and right at the little tippy top, draw another line. And those people at the top of that have zero liability, with a little added caveat, with no accountability. Now let's fill in the spaces in between. The next line up, draw another parallel line, are people out there that are no longer playing the game. Because you see, life, all it is a game, and it's a journey. How we go through our life and how we treat other people is how it's all going to come out on the other side. So the people that are not playing the game right now, who are they? Actually, they're pretty much the brain trust of this country. They're people that can build things. They're people that can fix things. They're free-thinking people that said, you know what? The predatory society has eaten me up. There's nothing left. A predator came in and a frivolous lawsuit and destroyed my family. You see, there's a lot of destruction going on all around us. It's not one agency, another agency, or frivolous lawsuits and predator lawyers. It's multifaceted. You can't pinpoint exactly what the culprit is, but you know what? They're stealing our dreams. What I want to do is give you back the ability to dream. There's a lot of people in this country who absolutely refuse to play the game. They got out of the game. What I would like to do is help you get back into the game of prosperity, of preserving wealth, and building a future for your family. The next line up are W-2 employees. Now I'm going to bring in different sections of the way our society works. First of all, we're going to get to a very powerful point. A W-2 employee is a contract. You see, when you sign up to be a W-2 employee, you sign a contract with a agency. And in that contract, certain deductions are taken out and so on. As that employee, you file for proper tax reporting, lawful employment, you would file on a 1040 form. The next line up, there's another group of people. They're contract workers. They are paid under contract on an Internal Revenue Service form 1099.
Now, before we go any farther, folks, I want to interject here. Bob's talking about the world in which most of you live. He's not making a judgment on whether these forms are correct or whether or not you're required to file and pay the income tax or anything like that. He's talking about the real world in which most of you live, which to me is total fantasy land, but we talk about that on other nights. So don't get confused here, and don't try to sit down and say, well, we're talking about the wrong thing. We're not. We're talking about reality. And most of you haven't got the guts to do the right thing and get out of the system, so you're in it. And we've got to talk about the system that you're in. And now, back to Bob.
Very good. On the next line up, we have contract workers. Contract workers are people that are paid on forms 1099. What are all these forms? What are all these numbers? Well, you see, there's 10,000 pages of Internal Revenue code sections. And if we take a look on their form, there's three or four different columns: corporations, partnerships, trusts, and each of those forms have certain laws, certain requirements in that filing process. As we go up on this little pyramid, we're going to take a look at corporations, partnerships, limited liability companies. Where do you get those from? Who gives them to you? You go to the lawyer and the state, and you say, please, may I have one of your entities? May I lease it from you? Because any of you out there that have corporations, limited liability companies, or partnerships will understand that you lease them from the state franchise board. Next block up, lawyers, financial planners, stockbrokers, and accountants. Who's controlling your life? Are you in control, or is somebody else in control?
That's an easy answer.
Now, above the lawyers, financial planners, stockbrokers, and so on, and accountants, write down universities, the educational institutions of this country. And right around universities, what I'd like you to do is draw a cloud. A very, very dense, thick cloud. Because for most of you, you're living under the cloud. You're living under the cloud of permission and intimidation of going to someone and saying, can I do this, please? Oh, no, no, you can't do that. I'm going to define something for you right now. A predator. A predator, in its simplest terms, is anybody that designs themselves into you that says, you pay me, and I will make sure that you're okay. Knowledge is power. So pay attention. Above universities, I'd like you to draw another line. Trusts. Above trusts, banks. Above banks, foundations. Above foundations, the World Bank, the IMF, and the G7. And above that, where we have the little blank triangle up there, zero liability and no accountability, let's call it about 300 people that are sitting up there on top of the heap. But let's go back and take a look at the cloud around the universities. See, the topic of what we're going to be talking about tonight is not taught in universities. The topic of trust in the University of Texas Law School is an 8-hour elective. Why? Why should such a wonderful thing be denied to you, the American people, when this country was formed and built on the principles of trust? You see, our government is a trust. We're going to go back through history and really take a look at what's going on and what's happened. Anybody that goes into any university campus will look and they'll see this particular building donated by such and such trust, such and such foundation, and so on. So now let's take a look at another part of the drawing, and we're going to call it the game. On the far left-hand side, just draw a big circle called the game. What sort of games are being played? What sort of belief windows are people looking through? Because I got to tell you guys something, and you got to feel it and sense it and believe it. For those of you that are out there in the corporate world or the W-2 world, do you know what's going on in the homeless world? Do you know what's going on with the poor people on welfare that can't find work? No.
I don't want to work.
or don't want to work. But there's a lot of people out there that might have just gotten laid off from Boeing or something like that. Do you know what their plight is? Can you dial into it? Can you feel it or can you sense it? Probably not. Because the only thing that you know and sense and live in is your own little world. So the games that are being played out there, what is the real game here? You see, the people at the top, they play a different game. Their game is purely played in a thing called trust. And so they feel they are the stewards of us. And quite frankly, they are. Because how many of you out there, and I'll just call it like it is, the simpletons or the sheep, once truth has been discovered, will act on it? Now, you won't do it. Most people don't act on it when they find something true and wonderful because they want somebody else to do it first. The other day on the news, I thought it was really kind of funny. Somebody says, well, what is the government going to do about our children watching too much TV? Isn't that kind of hilarious? What is the government going to do about it? See, we're always out there wanting somebody else to handle it for us. Well, quite frankly, through our republic, our election process, and so on, we elect our legislators, which, quite frankly, we gave up a little part of our sovereignty, gave it to our legislators to represent us as what? Trustees. See, they're the trustees, we're the beneficiaries. It's a trust relationship. Do you feel that there's any defrauding of the beneficiaries going on? Could be. Well, maybe not. Maybe they're doing the job they think they should do, but I'm going to propose to you that you take the responsibility, as our president told us to do, take back the responsibility of honor and sustaining the law and moving forward with your family in a positive direction under the law. When I do presentations, I'm doing the same thing right now. I'm trying to find my work, and I'm flipping through pages. So take out another piece of paper, and what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at a very powerful law, a law that cannot be changed. On the back side of the paper, or a new piece of paper, I want you to write on the very top of it, True North. Is it possible that there's a law out there that cannot be changed? It is on solid ground, and when you act on it, you are also on solid ground. We're going to talk about a law that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Do you know what I'm talking about? In any business that you want to engage in, do you write the positives and the negatives, the pros and the cons? So on your piece of paper at the very top, write True North, something that you can depend on. As the sailors go across the sea, they have to depend on their compass. They have to discover where North is, what is true. Think about something. I'm talking about natural law here. The way you feel, the way things naturally are, things that cannot change. The laws of trust were written based upon the natural law. Not man-made law, natural law. So write a positive and a negative. Hey, it's your choice. Where did you put the positive? Did you write the positive first or did you write the negative first? Think about it. What did you do? What did you do instinctively and naturally? I bet a bunch of you put negative thoughts down first.
I'll bet you most of you did.
Yeah, let's figure out what's wrong first and let's figure out what's right. Hey, Gary.
Let's figure out why we can't do something instead of why we can.
Well, those are the people that want permission.
Yes, and that's why it works so well.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, that's why socialism succeeds so well.
So what I did in my sheet here is on the left-hand side, I wrote positive, and on the right-hand side, I wrote negative.
Let's talk about this for a minute, Bob, because most people don't understand what we're talking about. I know that right now. They haven't got the slightest conception of what natural law really means. Natural law, ladies and gentlemen, we've discussed it on this broadcast before, but maybe not in the depth that we should have, is the law that the Founding Fathers talked about. They were great students of human nature. They were great students of nature, period. They understood how things work. Natural law is God's law. It is the law of the universe. It's what makes the planets circle around the sun without spinning off into space. It's understanding the natural course of events, the way that things normally are. In nature, we have animals that are prey, and we have animals that are predators. And the natural method of the way that these animals live is that the prey animals do their very best not to get eaten, but they don't do anything to counteract the predators. In other words, they're usually grazers. They're animals who are vegetarians. They're timid creatures who usually hide as much as possible, and they have their eyes on the side of their head so they can see behind them and in front of them. Predators, on the other hand, are brave. They're aggressive. They have their eyes in the front because once they pick out their prey, that's the only thing in the world that they concentrate on. They don't think of anything else. So in the natural world, you have events that are always going to take place. This is according to the natural law. Planets circle around the sun because they have a tendency to go in a straight line. They're moving. And unless they meet an opposite force that will slow them down, they will continue to move. When they get near a star or another planet that has a gravitational pull, then they are pulled toward that planet. But they're not pulled into the planet. They're pulled into an orbit, which is a balance between the gravitational pull and the tendency of the object to keep going in a straight line. And so they orbit around and around and around, locked in this natural law. So, if you look at everything that happens in your life according to the natural law, you will come closer to understanding why things happen the way that they do, even to you, even in your life. Are you a predator or are you prey? If you're a prey, you will be preyed upon. If you're a predator, you're going to take advantage of the prey. There are people, because we can think, we're the only thinking animal that we know of in this entire universe, because we can think, and because we know the difference between right and wrong, can tread the line between the two. You will never, ever reach a utopian world where there is no prey and no predators, because that is against the natural law. And now that you understand that, back to Bob.
You know, that's great, and well stated, absolutely well stated, Bill. On your paper, a lot of you are going to be listening to this and not doing it. Those that are, you will discover something. You will discover something incredibly powerful. When you write it down, you own it. See, when you write something, you put your seal on it. You put your sovereign seal on it. Understand right now that you were endowed with certain unalienable rights. And we're going to talk about those. So write it down. You're going to discover something very powerful. So in any business decision, when you decide you're going to try to figure out, is this a good thing or a bad thing to do? What do? You write the pros and the cons. So on the left-hand side of your paper, write pros, and on the right-hand side, write cons. Are you tired of being conned? Are you being tired of lied to? Left-hand side, write good. What's the opposite of good? Bad, huh? Between the two, positive and negative, draw another line. And in big letters, write choice. See, as free people, free agency, we have choice here. We can be on either side, good or bad. It all depends on how we view it.
Positive or negative?
Positive or negative, the natural law.
I can do it or I can't do it.
That's right. So we have on the positive side, let's write down the word trust. How many of you out there are married or in business? What is the key element that you have in a successful relationship, business, friends, marriage, family, whatever? Hey, trust. What's the opposite? Distrust. Are you going to succeed in business or relationship if you don't trust the people that you're working with? We're going to learn some definitions of words here. The power of the word is incredible when you understand the definition. How many of you know the definition of the word peruse? When Hillary said, I've perused the health plan, how did it make you feel? How does it make you feel right now when you hear the word peruse? Oh, well, gee, I kind of looked it over. Well, the definition is an in-depth study. So she made an in-depth study. She used the right word. She's been a very well-educated person. She has the knowledge, therefore she has the power. You see, rich people aren't any smarter than poor people, you guys. They just get smarter sooner. That's what we're here for. So you're going to learn definitions of words. A guardian. What is a guardian? We're talking about natural law. We're talking about legal people now. See, the definition of a trustee, someone that you trust, is a guardian. A guardian of who? A guardian of the beneficiaries, the family members. Well, the opposite of a guardian is a predator, a destroyer. You know what? Let's have some fun. Let's list, what do you think? Four predators out there. Predator number one. It's your list. You write it. Could death taxes, estate taxes, could that be a predator? How about ignorance? Is that a predator? You write it. Write down four of them. Are there any agencies out there that are predators? How about sickness, cancer, fear? Is that a predator? Okay, what's on the other side of the equation? The guardian, the trustee. Who do you think would make a good trustee in your family organization? A lawyer? Would that be in the best interest of your family? Maybe, maybe not. It's your choice. It's your decision.
With a lawyer, the difference is going to be whether or not you have enough money to pay the lawyer to satisfy his greed without destroying the assets of your family. And that's the truth. And that's why rich families or very wealthy organizations can afford good lawyers. They can pay those lawyers without hurting the organization and still increase the asset base of the organization. You can't do that. And if you try, what's going to happen is that lawyer is going to slowly bleed all of the assets from your family or from your trust or from your small business or from whatever it is that you have, not understanding that you have the brains and the same capability to do exactly what you're paying that lawyer all that money to do.
Because knowledge and education is what you need. It's very simple. So within under the guardian section there on the positive side, Who's your guardian? Is it your Lord? Is it your Savior? How about your husband or your wife? How about your kids?
Children.
What I want to do, children.
Kids are goats.
What I would like to do.
We're already in big trouble with poo, I can tell you right now.
Is propose to you that your family organization, when they're empowered with knowledge, can live through and sustain and protect assets generationally. On the positive side, let's take a look at love. What's the opposite of love in natural law? Fear. You see, if you love somebody, you want to be as close to them as possible. You got the essence of it? Are you beginning to feel the essence of natural law? If you love somebody, you want to be as close to them as possible. If you fear somebody, you want to be as far away as possible. But let's extend it out. Let's extend out fear. What is the extension of fear? Terror. When you're in terror, you're immobilized. You cannot move. Are you in terror? Are you in fear? It's your choice. Because you see, the extension of love is faith. In a relationship, you have faith in that person. So faith is operating under the power of love and intuition. Next line down, positive side, freedom. The other side, control. Next line down, positive side, liberty. The opposite of liberty is slavery. Next line down, rights or permission. How do you want to work? How do you want to function? Do you want to function under your rights, your God-given, unalienable rights, or permission? I'm going to read to you a Supreme Court case, Crocker versus McCloy, U.S. Supreme Court 649, Supplement 39-270. The Supreme Court holds. Can we go any higher than the Supreme Court in this country? No. The Supreme Court holds that a trust relationship comes under the realm of equity based upon contract law and is not subject to legislative restrictions as are corporations or other organizations created by legislative authority. See, a trust is self-enacted. It's a self-enacted contract. And we'll get into that in a minute. But permission in a corporate entity is you go to the state and you seek permission. So what do you want to work in, rights or permission? Unalienable. That's a positive word, is it not? But what is the real definition of unalienable? Cannot be taken away. Cannot be removed. You see, assets held properly, lawfully, and something that is not abusive, with well-educated trustees that constitute the board of trustees, the assets are virtually unalienable. But you see, in corporations and so on, state-driven entities where you go to the state and ask for permission, guess what's lienable? You don't own it. The state owns it. You leased it from them. Under unalienable joy, feels pretty good when you say that word, doesn't it? The opposite, sadness. Underneath joy, write down creator. You see, in a trust relationship, you become the grantor creator of the trust indenture document or contract. Weren't we given a covenant by the Creator, the law? A covenant is a contract. We'll go into that in a second. That if we are good stewards and we follow the law, our succeeding generations will prosper and do just fine. So what is a trust contract really? What law are we honoring and sustaining? The opposite of a creator is a destroyer. The creator is life, life itself. The opposite of life, everybody knows it, it's death. So I'd like you to take a look at the words on the positive side. Whose plan is it? Is it man's plan or it's God's plan? Because in all of those words, you will hear what I'm going to tell you. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, not death, liberty, not slavery, and the pursuit of happiness or joy. Take a look at the other side, folks. Fear, terror, control, slavery, permission can be taken away. Do we have these conditions in our country today? Abolition of private property, a heavy progressive income tax, abolishing of the right of inheritance. You see, in a trust relationship, there are no estate taxes. There are no probate taxes because the trust owns the property, legal title. The trustees control the equitable title. So when a trustee dies, it's not the state's plan, it's the trust plan. Confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels. Do we have that in our country today? A central bank. Government control of communications and transportation. Do we have that today? The president of NBC said, "It's our job is to tell the people what we want them to hear, not what they need to hear." Government ownership of factories and agriculture. Duh. What do you think a corporation is? You went to the state and said, "Hey, can I have one of your entities? Can I lease it for you, from you?" They control it because you gave them permission. Government control of labor. Government control of religion? My goodness. How did that happen? What is a 501c3? See, the churches in this country, they were already tax exempt. But what did they do? They went to the predator. The predator gave them a 501c3. And now who controls what goes on in that church, what is said, and what cannot be said. There was a church out in the San Francisco area, and the pastor got up, and he was talking about the morality in our country today. Some homosexual people in the congregation got up, pushed the pastor off the pulpit, and started talking their talk. Hey, it's free speech, isn't it? Members of the congregation got up and shoved the guys out of the church. Those boys sued the church. And the court ruled, hey, they have equal say because we own it. It's a corporation. Government control of education.
Did you hear what he said, folks? And it's absolutely true. You see, on your private property or on the property of a church, whoever owns or is the steward of the church can say whatever they want. That's freedom of speech. And anyone else who comes in has to have permission. But if you're a corporation, or if you're an entity of the state, if you have a license even, a license is a grant from the king to do something that's illegal. Do you have a business license? Is your business illegal? If it's not, why do you have a license? Because a license means that you can do something that is otherwise prohibited. So understand that. What Bob's talking about is not homosexual against the people in the church. What Bob's talking about is that the church lost their right of control over their property simply because they gave up their sovereignty and asked permission from the state to exist and operate and worship
And, of course, the state gave them that permission because with the permission comes control.
Are you beginning to see how we start losing it? See, when we discovered this country, when we went across from the East Coast to the West Coast, who was asking for permission back then? Think about something. The topic that I'm talking about tonight is for pioneers. We're talking about people that are out trying to discover a new way. What happened? How many of you out there are from a lineage of immigrants? Families that left suppressive countries to come to America, land of the free.
And did you come here to be free? Did your ancestors come here to be free? Or did they come here so that you could become enslaved and instead of standing on your rights and your sovereignty, begin to have permission again from the king? You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Time behind my back. I'd like to stand on one foot. I'd fight you with my eyes closed. Oh, pulling an axe on me, eh? Sneaking up on me, eh? Why?
Here. Go ahead and let us alone.
Oh, scared, huh? Afraid, huh? How long can you stay fresh in that can? Come on, get up and fight, you shivering junkyard. Put your hands up, you lopsided bag of hay.
Now, that's getting personal, Lion.
Yes. Get up and teach him a lesson.
Well, what's wrong with you teaching him?
Well, I hardly know him.
Well, I'll get you anyway, Pee-wee.
Shame on you.
What did you do that for? I didn't buy them.
No, but you tried to. It's bad enough picking on a straw man, but when you go around picking on poor little dogs.
Well, he didn't have to go and hit me, did you? Is my nose...
Now, there's a lesson, ladies and gentlemen, that you'd better learn. And by the way, if you have never seen The Wizard of Oz, go see it. It's not a children's movie. And it's not about what you think it is. The whole condition of the world is there for you to see, but only if you have eyes to see and ears to hear. Lessons to be learned. Robert?
Well, you know, I think we've pretty well covered the natural law side of things. As you look back over that list, add to it. It's your list. But let's take a look at what a contract is. Where did it begin? See, the original contracts were covenants. What is a covenant? That's everything that I am, and Bill Cooper stands for, we stand in it. It is our ethic, it is our moral fiber, it is everything that we are, that is our covenant. Would you like to get back to a handshake where your word is your bond? That's the way it used to work, folks. Our word meant something. Back then, we had a thing called ethic. When you were in business, commercial law and the law of the merchants, which is a type of law when people were engaged in commerce and shipping and so on, is there was an ethic that if I said I was going to deliver my product to you on Wednesday, it matched your ethic. You knew it would be there because that's the way you operated. As time went on, those practices were common. They were common to one another, nationally, internationally. That became common law. Treaties were formed based on common law practices. To understand the power of a contract, your word is your bond, a verbal contract, a written contract, but where was it really cemented in? When did it become very powerful in recent history? In the signing of the Magna Carta, the barons had an agreement with King John. And in that agreement, the right to contract was firmly written in to the Magna Carta. Those laws came through in England. The basis of law in this country was based upon the common law of England. Think about it. When the Constitution was written, there was a very, very powerful article, Article 1, Section 10. No state shall ever impair the obligation of a contract. Why was that written in? It had to be written in because the basis of the Constitution is a contract. It's a fiduciary contract. Under the power of the Declaration of Independence, this nation became free. And under the guidelines and bylaws, the Constitution, those are the supreme laws that this country operates under. Is it possible, and consider the possibility, of a family in declaration, establishing a declaration of trust, putting down the guidelines, the Constitution, the family Constitution, could you be governed by laws of your own making and live free? Absolutely. See, you're sovereign. You're a sovereign individual based upon your unalienable rights. And if you look up in Black's Law, page 1395, sovereign is the person in which independent and supreme authority is vested. Independent and supreme authority, that's you. That's liberty. Also in Black's Law, page 918, liberty. The freedom of the individual to use and enjoy his faculties in all lawful ways, acquire useful knowledge, marry, establish a home, bring up children, worship God according to the dictates of his own consciousness, live and work where he chooses, engage in any of the common and lawful occupation of life, enter into all contracts, which may be proper and essential in carrying out successfully the foregoing purposes, and generally to enjoy the privileges long recognized at common law as essential to the orderly pursuit of the happiness of a free people. A trust is a contract. And in the business law, volume, Westlaw, Uniform Commercial Code, the second edition. Page 1,151. Any person legally capable of making a contract can create a trust. Wow. Any person, are you capable of creating a contract? I think you are. The predators out there would like you to believe that that is something that you can't do, but they can do.
In fact, they spend a lot of time and effort and money trying to convince you that you can't contract, that you can't have a trust, and that if you do, you're going to get in trouble. Just the opposite, ladies and gentlemen, is true. Remember, the Constitution for the United States of America recognizes the right, doesn't grant the right, doesn't give us the privilege, it recognizes the right to contract. You have a right to contract. You can contract anything you want to contract. Doesn't matter what it is, including a trust. And you just heard the definition from both of the legal sites.
See, as we go forward, corporations, this is taken, and here's some volumes for you people to do your own due diligence. Research. Don't listen to me. Figure it out for yourself. Bill's been telling you that for years. Black's Law, 6th edition. Pick it up. Buy it. Read it. Figure out what a declaration is. Figure out what a trust instrument is. Figure out what you are as trustees are. The definitions of all of these things can be found in Webster's 1904 dictionary. Not the recent one, but 1904 dictionary. The Law of Nature and Nations, 1675. See, a corporation is an artificial person or legal entity created by the laws of the state, an association of persons created by statute as a legal entity, a franchise, a special privilege to do certain things conferred by government on individuals or corporations, and which does not belong to citizens generally of common right. What do you want to do? Permission or work under your God-given rights of contract? I'm going to read to you a definition of a fiduciary. A fiduciary is a trustee. But there's another very powerful law that comes into play here. It's called the fiduciary law. What I'm reading from here is from an exam that the SEC people have to take on ethics.
That's the Securities and Exchange Commission.
That's correct. So why do they need to take an exam on ethics? Either you lie or you tell the truth. That's how simple it is. But their definition of a fiduciary is someone who is in control of another person's money. Well, that's what I would expect from the SEC. But a fiduciary is someone who is in a private capacity to preserve and protect information and assets for the beneficiaries. Those generally are your children.
But can be anyone whom you contract it to be.
That's correct.
Or whom the trust contracts it to be. Or whom the beneficiaries give up their rights to be a beneficiary and contract it to be.
The concept of fiduciary duties stems from the laws of trust. At least one scholar traces the trust concept to 170 BC. Others claim the concept rose from 5th century German law or from the concepts developed under the Islamic law and are transported to England by the returning crusaders. In any event, the concept of trust were firmly cemented into the English law by statute in 1536. Pretty powerful stuff. Bill's going to read to you the history of trust. Now, what he's going to be reading from is a journal, a publication. We have to give credit where credit is due. From the Internal Revenue Service, and excerpts from their volume, Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, yes. Here's what the Internal Revenue says about trust. The English adopted trust from Roman law as early as the 12th century to prevent their property from many abuses under the crow. For example, landowners were obligated to provide relief, money, or to help supplement the lord of the manor for numerous causes, such as the marriage of the lord's daughter or the knighting of the lord's son. In addition, the monarch imposed nearly 100 forms of taxes on the landowners. The landowners were prohibited from selling their land to others or even dividing the land among their children or grandchildren. Also, if the landowner was convicted of a crime, all he owned was forfeited to the lord of the manor or the king, leaving his family destitute. The practice of holding title to land in a trust eventually became commonplace. The trust permitted one party, usually the church as the trustee, to hold the property for the benefit of the owner and eventually pass this property to the owner's children. With the passage of time and continued abuse by the crown, passing of title of land to a trust became an ordinary practice. In 1535, the king and his nobles set forth to challenge the legality of the trust. They attempted to prohibit its use with statute of uses laws. The kings and his nobles considered the trust to be evil because it permitted the privacy of transfer, the legal avoidance of unreasonable taxes and regulations, the prevention of the taking of the estate of convicted criminals, and, most importantly, because it caused the loss of revenue to the king and his lords. The challenge of the validity of the trust fell upon the common law judges of England in the Chancery Court, the highest court in the land. The judges, who had absolute jurisdiction over legal estates, upheld the validity of the trust concepts. Within the next 5 years, the statute of uses was effectively abandoned, and the trust was securely embedded as part of English common law, having survived the formidable challenge by the king and his nobles. The colonists brought the concept of trust to America, along with the English common law. Patrick Henry is given the credit of drafting the first recorded trust on this continent. In 1765, he wrote a trust for Robert Morris, then governor of the colony of Virginia. Thus, the first trust in America was written more than two decades before the adoption of the Constitution for the United States of America.
Why? Why aren't you living in trust? Why doesn't your family have a trust? See, the key points in the history, and I hope you recorded this because you can play it back or you can maybe buy the tape from Bill. Unreasonable.
Not for me. I don't own it. You have to buy it from the trust.
You'll have to buy it from Harvest Trust. That's correct. But see, the key point in this article, Tales from the Crypt, Patrick Henry was credited with one of the first recorded trust documents, Governor Robert Morris of Virginia. Who do you think uses trusts in this country today? You don't, but our legislators do. Have you ever heard of a blind trust? President Clinton moves to put assets into a blind trust. Bush moves to put assets into the blind trust. I am reading from page 9 of the Internal Revenue Code document, Special Rules for Blind Trust. If you're reporting income from a qualified blind trust formed under the Ethics in Government Act of 1978, do not identify the payer of the income to the trust. formed under the Ethics in Government Act do not report the payer of the income. See, they use trusts. They preserve their family assets. It's time that we, the people, understand the law, honor it, and sustain it. I have to caution you, the Internal Revenue Service is out to attack trusts. The American Bar Association right now is giving classes on how to try to break trusts. Why? Why would they try to destroy something that is so founded in the law and so principally oriented? See, if you align with the principles of what a trust is, stewardship, you'll understand what I'm talking about and how powerful they are when handled lawfully. If they're not handled lawfully, the Internal Revenue Service would like to call you an abusive trust arrangement, illegal, and fraud. What you need to do is you need to get the education. The power comes from knowledge and schooling.
So like I've always told you, folks, you have to understand the law better than your enemies do. If you do, you can beat them at their own game. That's why I'm still standing here talking to you today. Now, the reason that they want to break the trust, ladies and gentlemen, is because the trust comes between the predator and the prey. Remember the concept of stewardship, guardianship. What does the shepherd do? The shepherd protects the flock. The guardian staves off the danger from whomever or whatever he or she is guarding. The steward protects, takes care of, sees to the needs of. The predator, if the trust is constructed properly, and if the trustees are proper stewards and guardians, and if they maintain the privacy of the trust, the predator cannot break the trust, cannot get at the trust assets, cannot injure or damage the beneficiaries. And to put it really simply, so that you can understand it to the maximum benefit of your own knowledge, they're trying to do exactly what the king in England attempted to do a few centuries ago. The king did not succeed, and neither will the predators today.
As long as the people understand the law. When you go into a trust relationship, and there are numerous trust promoters across this country that are promoting trust for one thing and one thing only, evading taxes, avoiding taxes, understand something. The IRS is there. They have their rule book. And in honor and sustaining the law, now I'm talking about the natural law, in a very powerful tool, when you understand the law and you become schooled in it, you will have the ability to preserve and protect your family's assets held in trust generationally. I'm going to give you a couple definitions in the, so that you understand what you are. Under the definitions of terms, a person is an individual, a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation. See, those are all legal individuals. And the IRS has certain qualifications, certain forms that you must fill out to operate the entity in accordance with their codes. In jurisprudence, the legality of contracts is every person has the inherent and unalienable right to freely deal or refuse to deal with his fellow man. The right to make and enforce contracts is one of the most sacred rights of the individual. So we're going to take a walk over to Hawaii. we're going to take a look at a giant trust over there. It's called the Bishop Trust. This particular article can be accessed from the Wall Street Journal, Tuesday, April 25th, 1995. The giant Hawaiian Trust now owns 11% of Goldman and Sachs and bills itself as a charity. Tax lawyers say they can't find any precedent for the trust's operation. Why can't they? Why can't trust lawyers find any precedent for the trust's operation? Go back to your pyramid of power. How were they educated? The entity that we're talking about is a very powerful entity when managed properly. And in all IRS publications, they say, we are not concerned about lawful trusts set up for estate planning and charitable giving. We're talking about an entity called a complex trust. How does it make you feel? How does that word make you feel? A complex. Oh, boy, it's hard. This is going to be terrible. I'm going to have to find somebody. How many of you have a trust called a living trust? See, the world out there deals in the game, but it's always the opposite. What you think is true might be false, and what is false might be true. Things do get confusing. But for any of you that have a living trust out there, it does not become a trust until you die, and then the assets are passed to the spouse or the husband or wife. They don't go on generationally. Eventually, the assets are probated. Does absolutely nothing for you while you're alive. Why not consider an entity that you, the grantor creator, create something that is up and running after it's created? The Internal Revenue Service defines a complex trust as any trust that does not qualify as a simple trust as explained above. That's in their rule book. See, the essence of a complex trust, it has to have a charitable entity. Weren't we given a stewardship? And weren't we given the law that all we need to do is give back to our community, and our community will do just fine? We're going to talk about the power and the money that is going back through charitable giving nationwide in a little while. But I'd like to walk you through and give you the essence very quickly on what a complex trust is. Complex in nature simply because it's more than one trust. It's multiple trusts. You see, a trust is a separate legal entity, and if income comes to it for proper tax reporting, you need to obtain an identification number from the Internal Revenue Service.
Now I've got to cut in here. That's only, folks, and this is the truth, if you really don't understand the law and you've been baffled by bullshit into believing that the law says something that it doesn't, then you may choose to pay tribute to your masters who have dictated that to you because you haven't got the guts to do what is right. So that's my explanation of that part of the thing. Most of you pay taxes not because you know the law or that you found that you're required to file and pay taxes. You pay taxes because you're afraid not to pay taxes. And you will carry that into your trust. And when you do that, you destroy the trust. Because when you give your contract over again to the state and submit to a law that does not apply to you, then you have given the power back, or the sovereignty back, to the ones that you wanted to protect it from. So Bob knows that, and I know that. So Bob is going to tell you how to deal with the way you're going to act, whether you know that you shouldn't do it or not, because that's what most of you will do because you haven't got the guts to do what's right. And that's the main reason why this country is in the situation it's in right now, is because it's populated by cowards. Great herds of grazing cowards that eat, bleat, and manufacture methane gas.
Back to you, Bob. Thanks for that, Bill. You see, a complex trust is a series of trusts. By separating assets and putting them into separate legal entities, if there is a litigation or a problem that occurs, it's isolated and it's protected and it's capsulized. So, a trust headquarters is separate from the business relationships. High liability items are separate from the business. So if vehicles are high liability items, there's a litigation, an accident, the deep pocket situation doesn't occur. They can't get to the business. They can't get to the trust headquarters. They can't get to the charitable foundation. There's a very powerful form, and for those of you that are filing taxes and filling out forms, the specific form that you will need to deal with is called a 1041 form. There's only about three lines on it that we need to concentrate on. As you see, a trust, when it's making a distribution to a beneficiary, that distribution is 100% tax deductible to the trust making the distribution. In a volume written by West Publishing, published by West Publishing Company, Cases and Materials on Income Taxation of Trusts, Estates, Grantors, and Beneficiaries. It's the only volume that I know that's out there that deals with this issue.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me make a point here. If the Internal Revenue Service is trying to tell you that trusts are illegal and can't exist, why are they taxing trusts? Why, on the Internal Revenue forms, does it specify certain forms to be returned by trusts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Either it is or it isn't. You see what I'm talking about? They tell you one thing, and then you read in their own rules and regulations something entirely different. They're the biggest pack of liars that ever lived. They're predators. And the only thing they're interested in is your money. Period.
In this particular volume, in the introduction, there was simply no classroom text available on the subject of what I'm talking about. Which goes back to why tax lawyers can't find any precedent for the trust operation written in the Wall Street Journal article. This particular volume that I'm only going to quote the first two sentences in the first two paragraphs was compiled by the Professor of Law, University of California, Professor of Law, Columbia University, the Dean of Professor of Law at Berkeley, the Professor of Law, University of Chicago, Dean of Professor of Law, Emory University, Professor of Law, University of Michigan, Professor of Law, Hastings College of Law, University of California, Professor of Law, University of Illinois, Professor of Law at Duke University, Harvard University, University of Michigan, and the University of Texas. You see, the information's out there. I just told you where the universities are that compiled this book. The only classroom text available is the one that I'm quoting from. So in the first two sentences, the first sentence in the first two paragraphs, almost since the inception of the federal income tax, the common law garden variety trust has been recognized for its tax minimization and income splitting opportunities. Tax minimization and income splitting opportunities. Sounds kind of familiar on what was going on back in England in the article that Bill read to you. The basic feature, second paragraph, first sentence, page one, The basic feature of the tax rule embodied in subchapter J is conduit taxation. Under those rules, one fundamental objective is to tax income to the beneficiary of a trust. Conduit taxation.
Now notice, folks, it didn't say tax the trust. It said tax the income passed on to the beneficiary from the trust.
That's right. So as trustees that form the board of trustees, there are designated beneficiaries. This is an irrevocable trust. The trustees have no ownership over the trust. If you retain ownership or partial ownership, it's called a grantor trust, and everything is taxable to you as the individual. And there are traps put in place so that people will fall into that, those traps. Quite frankly, the most important trap to stay out of is the feeling that it's mine. That's my car. That's my house. It's not your car. It's not your house. It's the trust headquarters. It's the trust vehicle. You see, you become stewards. You give up ownership and become a trustee and a stewardship over it. That knowledge is very powerful when you go to a very special school and learn about what I'm talking about.
And folks, if you're married to material possessions, if you can't give them up, if you must own things, you can't have a trust, because you can't own anything if you have a trust. Whatever you do own, if you have a trust, must be kept totally separate from the trust. It becomes your personal property, and then it is subject to whatever laws or rules concern personal property. The trust property, the trust assets, are not yours. You can't have them, ever. You can't even use them except in the official capacity of a trustee, in the official performance of the duties of the trustee. In other words, you can't decide to get into a car owned by the trust and take a 2-week personal vacation. You can't do that. If you're going to take a trip, it's got to be trust business, and the trust has to approve your use of that car.
And that's all documented in the minutes of the trust. You see, people that go into a lawful relationship in a corporation or a trust, and they don't follow the law, the regulators will come in, and they will clean your clock, and they will eat your socks, and you will have nothing.
Not my socks.
Not your socks, Bill. So following the law is very important.
Sock.
Yeah, sock. Oh, that's sick. That's a sick joke. Oh, man. You see, the predators out there, they're numerous. I'm going to give you a quick comparison here. If you have a corporation and you're a shareholder, the shareholders can be sued. They're the owners of the state-driven, the corporation. The predators can come in, and they can go through, and they can do a thing called discovery, which is turn over the books and records and show us the evidence so we can build a case. But in a trust relationship, you become the fiduciary, and a very powerful law called the fiduciary law. I'm going to give you a quick illustration. Just think there's a gathering at an upscale country club, and a bunch of the boys are hobnobbing around and talking about their business dealings, and one of these individuals conveys to the group some business dealings that were fraudulent. There's an attorney sitting in that circle, and he hears of this. You understand that an attorney is an officer of the court. He works for the court. Now, if he knows that something is going on illegal or a crime has been committed, it's his job as an officer of the court to have that individual arrested. But now what happens when the individual, same guy, comes up to the attorney and he says, you know, George, the guys here at the club says you're a good lawyer. And I need to consult with you regarding a matter. What will you charge to consult with me? And the lawyer says, I will charge you $150 an hour. And so this particular chap shakes his hand. What just occurred at that moment in time? You had two or more parties, a job to do, and consideration paid. In that magical moment in time, the elements of contract were fulfilled. What can't that lawyer do? Client-attorney privilege. He cannot divulge anything about the conversation, or he would be breaking the law, the fiduciary law. See, as trustees, you are working under the fiduciary capacity to enhance the financial rating of the trust and to protect the assets for the benefit of the beneficiaries, not you, the beneficiaries. The beneficiaries get the benefit. So that fiduciary law carries into the trust relationship. So when a predator comes in and says, hand over all the books and records, you quite simply say, I'm sorry, I would like to do that, but I'm bound by the law of privacy, the fiduciary law, and trust records and books are private, based upon Supreme Court cases that date back to 1886 that have never been overturned. You see, by empowering yourself with knowledge, your family has the ability to preserve and protect its wealth, just as the most affluent families in this world have been protecting their wealth for generations. But the nature of a complex trust, it has to have a charitable purpose to it. You see, if there is tax reduction benefits that go along with a trust relationship, which they are when managed properly, monies flow in to a private charitable foundation in trust form. When the family trust makes that distribution, it's 100% deductible to the family trust when making that charitable contribution. So there's a lot of benefit. There's a lot of tax reduction that has occurred. But what is your responsibility in honoring and sustaining the law? Quite frankly, it's giving back to the country. You see, foundations in this country, and I'm going to read to you from The Tax Law of Charitable Giving, Bruce Hopkins.
I just want to let you know you got 10 minutes. Or excuse me, 12 minutes.
All right. I go on and on with this subject because I love it. Because I love seeing families understand the law and empower themselves and make a difference. See, the little guy in Tiananmen Square stood in front of the tank. He stopped the tanks. That's one man.
That's my hero. My personal hero in all the world.
So if you think one person can't make a difference, you're mistaken. See, all we want to suggest to you is you can make a difference in your family relationship. But let me tell you what's going on, and this is a quote from Bruce Hopkins, Law of Charitable Giving, page 25. In 1973, the amount of charitable giving nationwide was $26 billion. That went right back into the community. Dollar for dollar, $26 billion was making a difference. Kind of like Ronald McDonald's House or a park daycare center. Something that removes or lessens the burden of government and that serves the public good is charitable activity. There was another $26 billion went back into the public sector by volunteer work. You know, you drive down the highway and you see so-and-so had cleaned up this strip of highway. See, that's removing and lessening the burden of government. But in 1992, that volume rose to $124 billion, charitable giving back into the community. You see, as Clinton said in the inaugural speech, take back the responsibility, America. learn the law, follow the law, and with your charitable foundations as the Board of Trustees, you can do something very powerful in your community. Because quite frankly, the government is not doing the job. You have a choice. Put money back directly into this country or beef up the nuclear arsenal of Russia for their Y2K problem. It's your choice. I'm not suggesting you do the whatever. I mean, I can't do that because I would be breaking the law if I told you or pressured you, intimidated you into doing something that was not your free agency. So, a complex trust is a very powerful tool when managed in accordance with the law and through your foundations that are established. Do something back in your community to build America back. It's being stolen from us. It's being stolen from you. So are you going to do what's right? Or are you just going to sit there? See, there's only one problem with discovering knowledge. When you discover knowledge, and you go out and you research it, and you do nothing, then you're a part of the problem. Either you're going to be a part of the solution, or you're going to be a part of the problem.
I call it stupidity. When you don't know the information, that's ignorance. When you know it and refuse to act on it, that's stupid.
That's right. That's right. See, you know, the way our country is headed, it's what we are asking for. The people that are controlling this are merely giving us what we're asking for. What's the government going to do about this? What's the government going to do about my welfare check? What's the government going to do about my medical?
It's lions, tigers, and bears. You notice that when that lion came out of the forest, they all got scared. And as long as they were that scared, that lion was taking advantage of it and slapping around and scared them some more and would have enslaved them. But as soon as Dorothy stood up and smacked that lion on the nose, that was the end of that. Can't be afraid, folks. If you're afraid, you're enslaved. If you're married to material possessions, you're enslaved. If you're not willing to die for freedom, you can never, ever have it. You will never, ever be free because the mere threat against your life will take it away from you. And if you're a Christian and you're afraid to die, you're not a Christian. Absolutely impossible. You're lying to yourself and to everybody that you say that to.
Because all you want to do is go home.
That's right.
I like to equate what I've been talking about to the express road. Getting on the highway. You know, as you're driving through the cities and so on, you're stuck in traffic, you're stuck in confusion. All of a sudden, a car goes speeding by, and you go, wow, I wish I could get into the express lane. I wish I had what that person had. You know, it's really kind of sad what I'm going to tell you. But in the last year, out of what Bill has written in Veritas, various radio programs, there has only been one person in 1 year that has gone through a very special educational program to empower his family in what I've been talking about. One person. I congratulate him because his family now has the tools to go on. You see, as we go forward into the next year, into the next millennium,
and we don't need a bridge.
who's in control? What tools do they use? So, America, you better get smart real quick. You better take action. You better learn.
And don't be fooled by all this millennium stuff.
It's like when you turn 21. Remember that magic date you waited for all your life? When I'm 21, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And you woke up when you were 21 and found out you were the same person you were the day before. And nothing was different. The world was still there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something right now. The calendar is going to roll over, no matter what, into the year 2000.
The sun's going to come up.
The sun's going to come up, and you're going to be the same person. It's going to be the same world, and all this millennium crap is just the biggest bunch of bullshit that you've ever heard in your life. You don't need a bridge to get to it. All you do is need to tear off a page of the calendar. It's that simple.
You know, what happened back when, remember when everybody was building bomb shelters?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to blow up. Russia's going to blow us up.
Well, that's what they wanted us to believe. And not everybody was building bomb shelters, but some people were.
Well, yeah. But what happened? What did we see? We saw a destitute country. When the wall fell, what did we see? Where was the big bear? Where was the big destructive force? Who was going to destroy us?
Go watch The Wizard of Oz, and you'll find out who was behind that curtain.
It was our own imagination. It was our own belief. Okay? So, as we stay on the negative side, we don't go to the positive side, we fall trapped of fear. We're in terror, so we don't move. And that's where certain entities want us to be at. It's your choice.
It's always been your choice. This whole thing is of predestination, and that everything was preordained way back at the beginning of time and all this kind of stuff. It's not true, folks. Don't paralyze yourself. There's free will. It's what it's all about. And it's the free will to make a choice. And that choice will make a difference. But only if you act upon it. So you can't walk out on a battlefield and say, I'm on your side, and then don't play the game.
You know, the really sad thing is where we came in, and I was talking about what really bothers me, and it's not the frivolous lawsuits, it's not the greed, it's not the IRS. It's the stealing of our dreams, the stealing of the communication between father and son, the family being together. We need to get it back. So to move forward, we need to go back. Does that make sense? We need to go back and rediscover the principles of what this country was built on, the law, the scripture. We need to go back and revisit how powerful a very, very old entity is called the trust. So to go forward, we need to go back. It's the opposite. The direction we're heading is only taking us...
Remember, Dorothy wanted to run away? And by golly, she didn't run away on her own. It was by circumstance, but she ran away. And she went to this magical land over the rainbow. And after it was all over... What was the most important thing in her life? And where did she go? She went back to her roots. She went back to what was important. She went back to Aunt Em. She went back to Kansas. Because when it all came down to the nitty-gritty and the brass tacks, that was more valuable and more meaningful and more loving than all of the magic of the Land of Oz could ever, ever supply. And Oz represented the great deception that controls people's lives in this world. Go watch that movie and understand that we don't want to be there. The basic truths, the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded are the rock that we had better hold fast to. And if you're religious, and if you're like me and you are a Christian, then there's one other rock that rock stands upon. And it's all based upon the laws of God. The natural law. And if you try to go against the natural law, you're going to get stung in the end. Because remember, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
There's a very powerful place where you can go to get the knowledge to empower your family in a generational, court-tested document. It's the only university that exists in this country that provides the generational knowledge for families to honor and sustain the law. We better honor it, and we better sustain it before we lose it. Now, the only way that you're going to find out about it is you're going to need to write to Harvest Trust, to William Cooper, and you're going to have to write a little letter that says why you feel a trust is important to you and your family. And you must put your phone number down, because you will get a call back from me. You see, I am a trustee. I'm a trustee of a foundation that is involving the higher education of trusts and the expansion of charitable giving. But we, at our learning institute, do not put people into trust who are interested in evading, defrauding, or any criminal activity. So when you send in a letter requesting information, you need to put your phone number on it, because quite frankly, there'll be an interview. I'm going to interview you, because we don't educate everybody. This isn't a tool for everybody. It's only a tool for those Americans that wish to preserve and follow the law.
And if you don't do that, you'll break your nose and then pour champagne on your head.
That only happened once.
Ah, a little journey back in time there, folks.
There it was. It's really funny, though. You know, after all of Vietnam and everything, I say, you know, I'm the only person that ever broke your nose.
That's true. Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed tonight's broadcast. Hope you learned something. And, you know, whatever you do is your business. But as a trustee, as someone who is there, I hope that you go into trust. Thank you, Bob, for being our guest tonight.
Oh, thank you, Bill.
And good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. And Bob's going to be back Monday night to take your calls and answer your questions. And between now and then, we're gonna bust the time warp and talk about old times and just have some wonderful fellowship here.
Take care.
God bless you.
I can see what's happening.
What?
And they don't have a clue.
Who?
They'll fall in love, and here's the bottom line. Our trio's down to two.
Oh.
The sweet caress of twilight. There's magic everywhere. And with all this romantic atmosphere, disaster's in the air.
To make her see the truth about my past, impossible. She'd turn away from me.
He's holding back, he's hiding what I can't decide. Why won't he be the king I know he is, the king I see inside?
I don't know what makes you happy, folks, but when I'm with my family, and Bob is here, and Doyle comes home, Those are the most important moments of my life. See you Monday night.
And if he falls in love tonight, it can be assumed his every day's with us are his enjoy.